And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre. So here in Massachusetts, we've had our ups and downs with transportation, public transportation. The MBTA, of course, dominates all of our thinking about public transportation, but in fact, we have regional buses, we have bus service in Boston, we have subways in Boston, we have commuter rails in Boston. That organization, the Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority, has had financial problems for various reasons, just and unjust. Recently, the MBTA took a big hit with the arrival of the COVID pandemic. Ridership fell off dramatically, and the leadership of the MBTA did making service cuts that were in line with the reduced ridership. That, of course, has a lot of implications that I hope we can talk about. More recently, the Biden COVID relief plan provides a substantial amount of money for the MBTA to resume service. And as of right now, the MBTA is attempting to restore full service on all of its lines, despite the fact that there's relatively few riders. So we have this confusing situation where the state is emerging from the pandemic. We're looking to the future. We're trying to get back to whatever the new normal is. And it makes you wonder what's the value of public transportation in a state like Massachusetts. We are thrilled to have with us tonight Chris Dempsey, who is the director of the Transportation for Massachusetts Advocacy Coalition. And if there's one guy in the state of Massachusetts that can answer the question about whether the MBTA, whether public transportation, it's Chris. Thank you so much for being here, Chris. How are you doing?
Ted, it's really great to be on with you and your listeners.
That's good. So you heard what I was just saying about the MBTA. Did I tell any untruths? Did I tell the story correctly? Or how would you describe where we are with public transit, say, writ large in Massachusetts, and where are we headed?
I think you got it right, Ted. And this is certainly an unprecedented time for transit, as it is for many aspects of society and many of our institutions. But transit has been hit harder than most. Ridership on the MBTA is down something like 75 or 80% from its peak. So there's about 15, 20, 25% of the ridership it had a year and a half ago. Now, the decreases in ridership are not equal across all the different modes, as we call them. In fact, bus ridership is still at about 40% of what it was. A reminder that many of our bus riders are folks who are transit dependent. Transit is their only way to get around, or certainly their best way to get around. And they're using that service to make essential trips to places like the grocery store. The subway system is down about 80%, but still moving many essential workers, nurses and doctors and others, grocery store workers, others that need to get around in the midst of the pandemic. And the commuter rail and the ferry service is the service that's had the largest drop in ridership. And the commuter rail, it's serving about 15% of the ridership that it once had, a reflection of the fact that many of those riders have been white-collar workers who have the luxury of being able to do their job at home. But even then, 15% is still a healthy number of people that are trying to get to their jobs at hospitals, trying to maybe visit a family member to take care of that family member. The trips that are happening on transit today are essential trips. They're trips that people have to take, not trips that are being done for leisure or because people are just joyriding the system. We've been advocating with a set of other advocates under the Transportation for Massachusetts umbrella and also the Transit is Essential umbrella for the MBTA to keep running as much service as possible. And that's now possible because of the federal government stepping up. And I think across Massachusetts, no matter where you're listening to this podcast and no matter whether you ride the T every day or used to ride it every day or not, you should be thanking members of the congressional delegation in Congress and in the Senate for stepping up and providing unprecedented federal funding for the MBTA. Over the last 13 months, the MBTA will have received about $2 billion in total funding from the federal government. which is unlike anything it's ever received in the past. And it will be able to use those funds on operating costs, whereas traditionally the federal government only provides substantial capital costs for longer term projects. Mm-hmm. So it's been a lifeline, and it's going to allow the MBTA to bring back most of the service that it has cut, not all of it, but most of it, and puts the MBTA on a financial footing for the next 2 years that hopefully allows us to get back to a new normal where people are riding transit in substantial numbers again, and the system can be more financially viable because of that.
Well, tell me, what's the rationale for having full service when the number of riders is low? People could say, well, I mean, I think Baker said, well, you know, no way to run a railroad to run empty cars around. I mean, why would you say that's the right path to go down?
Yeah, and that was a little bit of a cynical quote from the governor. He said it's bad public policy to run empty trains and buses. The buses and trains have never been empty. They've been less crowded than they were before the pandemic, but they're still carrying people to essential jobs. And while we are still in a pandemic, while we still don't have the vaccination numbers that we need, and we don't have herd immunity as a society, we want to be providing people with safe access to transit and transportation more broadly without feeling like they're crowded onto a subway car or on a bus where they might be susceptible to the spread of this deadly virus. And so it's about allowing people to be physically distant and socially distant while still riding transit, especially for those essential trips. Now, the other reason to keep service running in healthy numbers and at healthy levels is because in transit, frequency is freedom. The more frequently your transit comes, the more likely you are to use transit and be able to work transit into your day. When your bus only comes every 2 hours, as it does on some lines on some of the RTAs, if you miss that bus, you are completely screwed. You are not getting home that day. And it has enormous implications for your family, whether you're taking care of kids or elders or just trying to make sure you eat healthy. That becomes impossible when you miss that bus. If your bus comes every 10 minutes and you miss a bus, it's a little bit of an inconvenience, but you're still going to get home, you know, 10, 15 minutes late. It's not going to completely ruin your day. And so we want that frequent service to be in place to keep the ridership that needs to use it. Because if we don't do that, there's a risk of a death spiral in transit where the service becomes unhelpful to people. People stop riding it. They make life decisions like buying a car or moving to a place where they can't ride transit, or transit is not working, going to work for them. And we lose that ridership permanently. And then we have less ridership and less revenue, and then we can run less service and then have even less ridership. And that's the death spiral that transit advocates talk about and that we want to avoid. And again, that the federal support has really helped us prevent because of the generosity of the congressional delegation and the way that they fought to make sure that transit was well funded.
I think those are two compelling reasons. You know, the equity involved in allowing the essential workers that we all praise, right, to actually get to their jobs and avoiding this kind of death spiral. Because part of this is, I mean, we want to begin to think about what the T is going to look like in 10 or 15 years. I mean, what's the long game? So, Chris, before we go on, let me just pose one question. It's kind of a philosophical question, and it shocks a lot of people when they first hear it. But there's an argument that says public transit is a societal good, you know, full stop. It's a good thing to have. And that the fairest thing to do is to have public transportation be free. And that's the direction we should go in. What's your feeling about whether or not the buses, the T, the commuter rail should be free?
Well, I'm really glad that people are raising this question. And some of the people who are doing it are folks that I really admire, people like Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, and Boston City Councilor and mayoral candidate Michelle Wu, who have both been very clear about their desire to have more free public transit and potentially to make the entire system free eventually. I think it's a worthy debate and a worthy discussion. On the other side of that debate is that transportation broadly and maybe transit more specifically could be seen more like a public utility. So just like the Mass Water Resources Authority is owned by the public and is a piece of public infrastructure, but we still pay our water bills every day or every month, that system works, and that what we pay for, we value in a way that's different than we get it for free. I think there's a case to make there. Transit is expensive to provide, and MBTA fares bring in about $700 million per year in a typical year. And so if we were able to have a magical pot of $700 million a year kind of drop down on the T every year, we would be left with a question: should we take that money and make fares free, or should we use $700 million to provide $700 million more service, bus service and train service and rail extensions? You can't do both. You have to make a trade-off between those two things. And so there's a case to make that transit should not be free, but that the fare should be used to improve the system. Now, no matter where you are on either side of that debate, I think everybody that's listening to this podcast can probably agree that transit fares are too high today and they should be lowered, especially relative to transportation modes that are more harmful or costly to society, but that have not seen the increases in cost that transit has seen. And here's the best example of that. So since 1991, we've raised the Massachusetts state gas tax by only 3 cents. That's 14% in about 30 years. In the same period of time, we've raised MBTA commuter rail fares by more than 200% and MBTA bus fares by up to 300%. And so the economic message we have sent people over the last three decades is you should drive more and you should take the MBTA less, which is the opposite message from the one we want to send if we care about climate and the environment and public health implications from all of those automobile emissions. So I think there's a strong case to make that we should be further subsidizing transit and maybe making it, certainly making it less costly, maybe making it free. And then we can have that debate about whether it should be entirely free or whether it should just be lower cost.
Interesting. Well, that's a very informative way. I mean, that's a good nuanced way to think about it. So one last question then. Tell me let me ask you to paint a picture of mass transit or public transportation in Massachusetts in the year 2035, right, where we're constrained by climate issues, we're interested in equity issues, the MBTA is still the main mechanism for public transportation. How should people expect, what should people want to have happen? Because what people want to have happen is more likelihood of happening. I mean, where should we be going?
Yeah. So there's a couple easy ones here, especially I think for the listeners of this podcast who I know care a lot about climate and a lot about the environment. And the first thing to say is that 100% of public transit vehicles in 2035 should be electric powered. They should be battery electric buses. There should be subway lines, of course, are already electrified, which is great. They're sort of the original electric vehicle, the subway line and the streetcar. I say I take a electric vehicle to work every day. It's called the Green Line. And then the commuter rail and ferries should all be electrified either through batteries, well, certainly batteries in the case of ferries, and then in the case of commuter rail trains or regional rail trains, either battery or catenary overhead wire, as is already in place on the Northeast Corridor or Acela line. So that's an easy one. The challenge there is to really push the MBTA to be a little bit more bold and aggressive in adopting electric vehicles. I think there will be some extension of rail over the next 15 years, but this is where perhaps counterintuitively, I would urge people to have a little bit of caution about just how much we push for rail extensions, only because those projects are really costly and they take resources away that could be used for other things. And so I'm not saying we shouldn't be expanding rail. We absolutely should. We just need to be thoughtful about when and how we do it. And we need to be able to prioritize a little bit.
That begs a question. I have to interrupt. I mean, we're having a Green Line extension, right, which is heavy rail cars moving a lot of people. What is the argument for that in favor of having a dedicated bus lane with 1,000 buses. So you have a 2-second wait between buses. I mean,
well, that's exactly where I was going, Ted. That's exactly where I was going is buses need to be a substantial part of the future. And today, buses are not necessarily seen as an attractive way to travel. And there's a bunch of different reasons for that. Some of them are cultural. But a lot of it is that buses get stuck in traffic. And it's absolutely miserable to be stuck in traffic, crowded onto a bus. And I'm a regular bus rider, whether it's an MBTA bus or whether it's an inner city bus. So I'm on buses all the time, and they can be really frustrating. When we give those buses a faster trip, either through a dedicated bus lane or through some form of road or congestion pricing that frees up that congestion, then all of a sudden we have transformed the bus experience. And we have made it an attractive and a cost-effective way to get around. There is no question that if you are looking for cost-effective transit, that bus transit is the way to do that. And it's if we're trying to, for example, create better connections between downtown Boston and every single gateway city in the state, including Springfield and Pittsfield, including Fall River and New Bedford, including, name a gateway city. Rest of them are connected by rail already. But there is no question that the fastest and most cost-effective way to do that by 2035 is by dramatically enhancing our bus service. It's probably about a tenth of the cost of rail and maybe even less to do that. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be taken seriously.
Interesting. Well, that will be... I like that. I like the idea of a bus that leaves every 15 minutes going to Springfield with, airplane style recliner seats in it. And I can just imagine how to attract people back onto buses.
So anyway, two things there, because I know East-West Rail is going to be of interest to your listeners. If you did that, and if you fixed the congestion issue, either with a bus lane or congestion pricing, not only could that be a luxury experience, like literally, lie flat seats with people bringing you moist towels every half hour at lower cost than the cost of a train ticket, but also it would actually get you from Springfield to Boston faster than the rail that's being proposed for East-West Rail, because it would be a direct express trip without stopping in the various stops along the way between Springfield and Boston, which are sort of a political requirement of East-West Rail, is to make sure that those stops happen for good reason. But a faster, more luxurious trip at less cost is a pretty compelling proposition.
Interesting. Well, that's fascinating. Chris, we need to put this discussion down, because even though it's been fascinating, let me say what we'll do is I'll put up links to some of the stuff we've talked about and the Transportation for Massachusetts website. What's that link if people want to go check out your stuff? How can they find out about
T4MA.org? So T 4MA.org. And we're also on Twitter at T4Mass, T 4MASS. We'd love to connect with people.
Super. So we'll put up links to that kind of stuff on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have a question about this podcast, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. You can, of course, listen to the show on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, any of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to listen to the Climate Minute on their favorite modern podcast distribution app. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Chris, thank you so much for a fascinating discussion.
Thanks, Ted. Great to be on with you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.